Tokyo Podcast Episode Number 10.
Hey everybody, on today's show I'm going to be talking to two very talented filmmakers who are making a documentary film about the growing number of mixed-race people living in Japan. Hey everybody, welcome to Tokyo Podcast number 10. I am your host, Anthony Joe, and I gotta say I'm very excited about today's show because I am going to be talking about a subject that I'm very familiar with, and that is being a mixed race person living in Japan. I'll be talking to two talented filmmakers who have a documentary film coming out called Hafu about the experiences of being a mixed Japanese living in Japan. It is estimated that 1 in 30 people born in Japan now are born to one Japanese parent and one foreign parent. So there's a growing number of mixed race people living in Japan. However, they're not really represented too much in Japanese society and culture. And in some cases, some of these people go to great lengths to hide their mixed race background. So it's going to be a very interesting subject. I'm really looking forward to talking to them. That's coming up a little bit later on in the show. But first, I wanted to talk about a really fun way I found of learning Japanese. As you know, learning Japanese is a never-ending process. There always seems to be some more kanji that you need to learn, and if you're struggling on your own, it can be a bit hard. And so for me, I always like to find new and fun ways to get excited about learning the language again. Because I got to tell you, I'm not a real language person at all. But if I can find a fun way to do it like a game, then I'll get into it. And I found a video on YouTube called The Labyrinth. And what this is it's an interactive video for learning Japanese where each video you listen to a spoken Japanese phrase and then you decide if you understand it or if you don't. And if you understand it, you click on the yes button and you go to the next phrase. And if you don't understand it, you click on the no button and then the host will explain it to you. So it's a really fun way to kind of gauge your level of understanding and how much Japanese you can hear and understand. And I think this is a really good way to test where your Japanese level is at to see how far into the labyrinth you can go. As you go further in, each phrase gets harder and harder, so you can kind of gauge where you're at. And many of the phrases and sayings are just common stuff you would hear on the street here in Japan. So it's a really a lot of fun. If you don't understand the word and you click I don't understand, they give you the explanation, they give it to you in hiragana, romaji, and kanji. So it's a really good, fun way to study these kind of basic phrases that you will hear and speak if you are living in Japan. And the host of these videos, his name is Alex Kobayashi, and he is one of the co-hosts of the Bad Communication Podcast. If you're looking for a good podcast about what's going on in Japan, aside from Tokyo Podcast, of course, I would definitely recommend checking out Bad Communication Podcast. These guys have been here a lot longer than I have, and they have produced a number of very, very good shows about current events over here. So definitely check them out, Bad Communication Podcast. If you're interested in the labyrinth, the Japanese labyrinth, I will link to that off of my website at tokyopodcast.com. Today I'm talking to two documentary filmmakers from Tokyo. With me is Lara Perez Takagi, who was born in Tokyo but raised in various cities around the world. Her father is Spanish and her mother is Japanese. She graduated from the Audiovisual Communications and Multimedia Science Center in Madrid, where she wrote and directed two short films. Also with us is Megumi Nishikura, who was born in Tokyo, also grew up in various cities around the world, and graduated from the Tisch School of Arts and Film and Television Production in New York. She has produced documentaries for the United Nations, Associated Press, and various NGOs. Their latest film is called Hafu, and it documents the growing number of mixed-race people living in Japan. Welcome, guys.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
So, all of us are Hafus in this room. We're all taking over. Tell us where the idea for this film came from.
So, there's a larger project called the Hafu Japanese Project that started in London. And there was an article written about them on the Japan Times. And I heard that they were coming to do some symposiums and conferences here in Tokyo. So I looked them up on their website and found out that they were gonna, what they do is like, their project consists of portrait photographs and in-depth interviews of just half Japanese people. So they did like a set of maybe 20 people in London, and that became really successful, or something caught a lot of attention of the media. And so when I read about them, I immediately went to their website and looked them up, and found out that they were coming to Japan. And I just had finished my master's degree in Waseda, and I had made this film called Madrid Tokyo, which was my project research kind of for my master's. And so since it was related to my identity as a half Japanese and Spanish person, I just emailed them, and they they replied to me straight away. So they were like, I just asked them like, oh, it would be great to do some kind of collaboration, or if I could help you guys in any audio visual way, like, I'd love to be part of this project. And so they were like, oh yeah, that'd be great. Let's meet up and please come to our photo shoot, because they were going to do the photo shoot they started in London. They were going to expand it here in Japan, because they obviously, there's much more hafus here in Japan than in London. So yeah, and that's how, attending this photo shoot, I heard of Megumi, who's also a filmmaker and a hafu. And and so after attending this photo shoot, we all kind of talked about how we had the same idea of, like, why not turning this whole event into a documentary film.
Tell me, what is this Hafu project? What was this that originally started in London?
So the Hafu project, or Hafu Japanese project, was started by the photographer Natalie Maya Willer and the researcher Marsha Yumi Lise. They did a collaboration in which they documented, well, they photographed and did in-depth interviews about what it means to be Japanese, or like finding their identity, or like just, I don't know, it was about being half Japanese, I guess. They did like community exhibition. They did exhibitions and like community gatherings. They did workshops at universities, and like they invited also like they would get like families in with their kids, and they do like various workshops in London. And so they called that the Hafu Japanese Project.
And when they came to Japan, their goal was just to photograph more Hafu people?
Yeah, their goal was to expand the project and get more people to participate, and also have the point of view from somebody who's actually in Japan rather than, you know, outside of Japan.
And that's where you guys came in with the idea for your film.
Yeah, after taking part in the photo shoot, our original intention was just to collaborate with them, because we thought that this like project was so, I don't know, related so closely to us, and we were so like felt so identified and loved the people and the atmosphere there that I was like, wow, you know, if I could do anything to help you, like in any way that I could, I'd love to, you know, offer my services or something. And so that's when they told me about Megumi, and I was like, yeah, you know, because I think it would be great to, you know, take this a step further and turn it into something that's more like a movie or a documentary. Mm-hmm. And that's where, after having several conversations on the phone, we ended up having our initial meeting sometime in December, where we sat down and talked about our upcoming documentary.
And your documentary is going to document, what, 5 people?
When we had that discussion, and we were sitting down, we were discussing, you know, how to tell the story of the half Japanese experience. And we explored several different possibilities. One was following, you know, maybe perhaps Marsha around in kind of like a Michael Moore-esque, like we go follow her on her journey in the quest of trying to understand the half Japanese experience. Or we thought we would do a historical documentary, but then we realized we would need probably 2 years of research before we could even start filming.
Right.
And for me personally, I really love doing portrait stories of people, and find those stories most intimate and, you know, able to kind of really bring audiences into worlds that they never thought they could experience. And so we thought, why don't we, you know, follow a few people around for a year or so, and through their shoes, really kind of help people to understand what that hafu experience is. And I think we just kind of went back and forth and, you know, just did brainstorming like, oh, isn't, you know, I met this person who had this kind of experience and this person who had this. And we realized there was so many different, there's so much variety and diversity to the hafu experience. So what we tried to do was our best to kind of, you know, encapsulate that and give five very different stories. And say this is all the half Japanese experience.
That's interesting that you said that everyone's got a different story, because when I tend to meet hafus, we tend to share a lot of commonalities. Now, what do you get referred to? What do you get called at? What do you feel? Do you feel more Japanese? Do you feel more gaijin? We kind of share these commonalities. But you said that your stars, the people in your film, all had vastly different experiences?
I think we chose individuals that all have different experiences, but we can all resonate to a lot of the things that happen in their lives. So, yeah, there are a lot of commonalities, and that is why I think we chose these specific people, because they tell maybe several topics that you might feel really identified with, but in their own way, right? So you'll be watching one story and you'll feel like, oh yeah, I remember when I came to Japan for the first time, I felt like this. Or, oh yeah, whenever, you know, people ask me if I'm, you know, married to a Japanese person because they can't see the Japanese in me. And there's like, but we did it in a, through different people. So, there is a lot of topics that we wanted to touch, which are like really what the half Japanese person experiences here in Japan, but through the shoes of five different people. So
do you think it's harder for hafus living in Japan than it would be, say, in America or in London?
Well, the thing is, in Japan is a society that, well, as we have written everywhere in the media, it's like once proclaimed itself as monoethnic, and there's like this really big barrier toward, and this, you know, how the culture is really strong, that it doesn't look further ahead of what it is, I think. So when you spot something that's a little bit different, everybody focuses on it because it's not the same as everything else. So that's why I think we tend to stand out in society here in Japan more than it would happen anywhere else in the world, where there's more diversity or people are more used to looking at people with, you know, different features.
Do probably. The Japanese consider hafus half Japanese, half gaijin, or do they just consider them not Japanese?
I think it just depends on the person, really.
I mean,
in your guys' experience, how long have you both lived here?
I lived here for five, almost 6 years.
I've lived here for 12 years.
So when you guys are out and about, what do Japanese look at you guys? What do they think?
I think most of them think I'm a foreigner.
Yes, I think so too.
Yeah. But very rare occasions, they've asked me if I was half Japanese. Mm. Yeah.
And then when you tell them you're half Japanese, what's their reaction?
Mostly surprise. They're surprised, and they asked me to show my mother's photo. And then they feel it, that it's really funny that my last name is so Japanese, like Takagi, you know? They can't believe I'm Takagi-san. They're like, really? You're Takagi-san? With that face? And so, yeah, I mean, it's the story of my life. I guess every day is like that, so...
Which do you guys feel? Do you feel more Japanese? Do you feel more gaijin, or what do you? What's the stronger identity?
In my case, I feel much more Spanish. I think because I've grown up I've spent a long time of my life in Spain, especially like teenager throughout university. So I mean, I feel very Spanish. But when I'm in Spain, for some reason, I feel so Japanese for some things, you know. And at home, like we follow Japanese traditions sometimes, and like there's a lot of Japanese-ness inside of my like household. So, you know, with chopsticks, we take our shoes off, I don't know, we have a ofuro. <It's> like, so there's a lot of things that you know, it makes me different in Spain as well. Mm-hmm. And ways that people think that I would feel more reserved, maybe, because I feel like I have a lot of influence from my mother.
What about you, Maggie?
For me, because I grew, a lot of my childhood was in Japan, I definitely, I think, feel like I'm hafu. And when I am in the U.S., I definitely feel like I'm, I mean, I am American, but there's some distance there that I didn't have the typical American experience. And I feel like I come with an international perspective to America. And so Japan is really my home. And the more time I spend here, the more I feel that, yeah, this is where I belong and this is where my people are from and this is the place for me. So it's definitely, but interestingly enough, when I'm in America, I'm whatever. It doesn't matter, you know, where I'm from, really. I mean, people do ask, but it's, you know, such a light, kind of almost superficial conversation, and then we move on and get to what we're really interested in talking about. But here, it's so, like, every day I am half Japanese, and there's no escape from it. I cannot live in Japan as a foreigner, and I cannot live in Japan as 100% Japanese either.
Really? So every day in your life,
it is in my face every day.
You encounter that every day.
Yes.
Yeah. And
for you the same?
Yeah. I mean, you feel like you're being. Let's see. It's funny because when I'm with Japanese people, they'll be like, you think this way because you're half Japanese, or yeah. So there's always like some kind of, you know, it is in my face quite a lot, I think. You know.
Do you feel comfortable here?
Yeah, I feel very comfortable here.
Not comfortable per se, but like for me, because I grew up in Canada, and I also grew up in Japan, and I grew up in Hawaii, and I kind of grew up all around. So I never really spent a lot of time in one area. So when people ask me, where's your childhood? I don't really have one central area. And while I enjoyed that experience as a kid, it's kind of left me a little bit without a sense of feeling home or kind of an identity. You know, I don't feel 100% comfortable in Canada because I know that I'm not around like all my Canadian friends. But then when I come to Japan, I don't feel really 100% comfortable here as well. So I'm curious with you guys kind of growing up all around the world.
Yeah, I think for me initially, I felt similar to you before coming back to Japan as an adult and felt like, you know, where is home? You know, I've lived so many different places, like, you know, where do I belong? Those were questions, and maybe it'll be a film at another point in my life. But since coming back and really living here and working here as an adult, that's when I've started to have these realizations that this is where I'm from.
Because so. You guys were both born in Japan.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And then how old were you when you left?
Well, I was, I wasn't even a year old, I think, when I left. And we moved to the States. So, but I do know that, like, the first language I learned was Japanese. And so when I went to America, I was like, I couldn't speak English. And so I had to face that kind of difficulty in kindergarten.
So, I had the same thing. I was 5 or 6 years old when we left Hawaii and we moved to Oita. And this is like, you know, 70s. There's like no gaijin. I was the only one in the whole school. And probably my dad was the only gaijin in the whole little town that we lived in. And yeah, I mean, it was strange for me because up until then, I didn't really know that I was different. You know, when you're 4 or 5 years old, you're just playing with Play-Doh like all the rest of the kids. But suddenly I came here and I recognized, I was like, I'm different. I'm not like these other kids. And that took a little while to kind of get over. And then right when I was kind of getting into my groove in, you know, grade 3, we moved back to Canada. And so suddenly I wasn't able to speak English at like 9 years old and going into elementary school. And we moved to this little Inaka part of Canada as well. So there was no Asians in my class either. So it was kind of an interesting experience for me going to like being like the one guy in one school and then being like the other guy in the other school.
What the hell are my parents doing to me? You know?
That's funny.
But actually, it was interesting that once I moved to Thailand, I don't know if it's because of the Thais or there's a lot of half people in Thailand or the Thais are just so relaxed about everything. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of like, they have this word in Thai called maipinlai, And the closest translation in Japanese would be like daijoubu or don't worry about it in English. And that's what their whole attitude is towards everything there. It's not a big deal.
Like Hakuna Matata or something.
Right. Right. That's interesting. How do you guys deal with that then? Constantly being reminded that you're not
well,
one of us.
Well, that's why we're making this film. Because yeah. We need to
exteriorize our... Yeah.
No, I don't know. I think like it's a topic that must be addressed somehow because it's something that happens to us every single day. And I don't think it doesn't matter how integrated you are in Japanese society, I'm pretty sure they will always be asked if they are half Japanese or if they're foreigners. Like all these like people who come out maybe on the media or like print, you know, models or whatever, I'm sure they always have to face some kind of, you know, oh yeah, because I'm half Japanese, or they have to explain it somehow. And so, you know, I think we touched...
Like, are you saying like there's kind of a justification that they have to...
Yeah, somehow.
And how are half food people treated here in Japan?
I know a friend, for example, who he looks completely foreign from Okinawa, but he's completely Japanese. And so whenever he walks around the street, he looks so foreign that a lot of foreign tourists want to approach him and talk to him to ask him for some information or something. And so he runs away from them because he can't speak English. So
and he looks completely foreign.
Yeah.
Well, we're kind of lucky in a way, I think, that we don't look 100% Japanese. We don't look 100% Asian. You know, right. We kind of have that kind of mix. But one of the people that you feature in your movie, she's Korean-Japanese, mm-hmm. correct?
Right.
And she looks 100% Asian. So right. She kind of blends in, right. Doesn't she? But she must have had some difficulties in her life
right.
kind of recognizing these two cultures, which aren't the best of friends to begin with.
Exactly, yeah.
Was that a challenge for her?
I think we definitely wanted, when we, you know, started to do some research on the subject and we looked into kind of the demographics and we learned that, that, you know, the biggest kind of international marriages are between Japanese and another Asian country. We really thought, you know, that's a story that really hasn't been shared and told. And, we wanted to find somebody who was of that mix and to hear their stories. And we, you know, kind of, you know, met a few people of who had this kind of background, and it seemed quite common that there was perhaps a time in their lives where they kind of hid their, you know, other culture. And they only said that they were Japanese. And so we really wanted to explore what was that and why is that there this fear of being anything more than Japanese. And what is it, I guess, an advantage almost to be able to blend into Japanese? Is it there a difference between them and ourselves who obviously look mixed, and what was that? And so we found a lovely woman in Kobe who was able to share her story of growing up hiding her Korean identity.
That must have been tough, because I remember as a kid, you know, like growing up in like Inaka part of Canada, I didn't necessarily try to hide my Japanese identity, but when my mom would make onigiri for lunch and all the other kids are eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, I was kind of like, oh Christ, you know, like it's like instant attention. What are you eating?
Exactly.
A rice ball. What's that? Seaweed. Ew. Right? But then when I would bring my throwing stars or my kendo gear to school or something, everyone's like, wow, that's so cool, you know? Right. So I can imagine that, you know, at times you don't really want to stand out all the time.
Right, right. Yeah, I think I passed a phase in my life where I wanted to neglect my Japanese side. Because I came here when I was 6 years old, my parents thought it would be a great idea, you know, to improve our Japanese, to go to some summer camp in the Inaka in the mountains with a bunch of Japanese kids. And me and my brother, we hated every moment of that camp. Like, we were treated like foreigners. We were bullied. We hated it. It was horrible. So, yeah, from then onwards, I was like, why would I ever want to go to a country where they hate me so much, or they, like, I stand out so much and I feel so, like,
you know,
unaccepted.
Unaccepted, exactly. So, you know, I love my grandmother. I love my Japanese family. And that's the only thing that matters to me ever if I ever come to Japan and all, you know, the shopping and all that other stuff. But, yeah, I thought, why do I have to be part of this culture if I'm not accepted? And you know, and it was so, like, much more... It was so different, you know, like I've lived in Canada, I lived in the States, and I've never been treated that way in my life as a child, like by other children as well. So I was like, yeah, there's no need for me to learn this difficult language and learn all these kanji and like why I don't want to ever go back there. So that was a phase that I passed. But as I grew up, I obviously changed my mind. But
yeah, I went through the same thing too, because I hated being a curiosity in Japanese school. You know, although they're always very curious. Japanese people are so curious. And I hated being that curiosity. And it wasn't like a good kind of attention. It was kind of like this, like you're kind of an oddity.
Yeah.
Right.
But I never really got that too much in the West, in Canada. You know, a little bit when I first moved there. But I felt the same way too. I thought, why would I ever go back to Japan? But then when you come here, do you guys feel the need to act more Japanese? Or do you act... Gaijin.
When I came here, I felt like I could really understand why people would behave in a certain way because I felt like I how could I say it? Like things that foreigners might not understand, I could understand why. Like I would be able to explain the reasons why Japanese people would do things in a certain way and why the rules are set up in this way, for example. I don't know, like
Do you feel that being hafu kind of gives you a better insight into Japanese culture?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like I'm part Japanese. I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm 100% Spanish. I feel I am half and half, and even though my identity is much more Spanish than Japanese, you know, whenever I come to Japan, I feel like this is my second home and I can follow the rules without causing any conflict. But of course, there are a lot of things that I don't understand about this culture that I love it to change. But, the same way I feel about Spain has things that I wouldn't want them to continue. And, you know, it's something that you can't really change, but...
I'd love to go to a party at your house. Like, all the Japanese are just sitting there all quiet, and all the Spanish people are having fun, you know? Like, it must be such a strange mix, all sipping their tea, and all everyone's dancing around. Oh. Yeah. Like, you ever see some of these mixes, and you're just kind of like, wow, what is that family like? Eh? Like, right. Just completely two different cultures come together.
Yeah, we have this great scene in the film that we hope, you know, will... be able to keep when we're editing is with Sophia from Australia, her aunt and uncle from Australia come and visit, and they all go to lunch with her Japanese aunt and uncle. And so you really see this really, you know, outgoing, boisterous Australian side with the reserved, you know, quiet, polite Japanese, and they're out at lunch, and it's we think it'll be a quite funny scene, and
yeah.
A lot of people will really enjoy seeing these two cultures come together.
Yeah,
that's. I'm really looking forward to seeing this. What has been the reaction from like the hafu community? There's not really a community per se, but hafus online, and what have there been their reactions to your film?
Well, all I ever noticed was support from everybody and curiosity, and people want to know more. And we went and just made it a Facebook page, and immediately we got all this attention. Like in the first week, we had like 1,000 fans, and we're like, "Oh my god, what's happening here?"
Maybe not quite that many, but
like maybe 700.
It was pretty
of them.
Amazing.
Yeah, how fast people were starting to click the like button. And
do you get the feedback that, like, for me, whenever I meet other hafus, I have like this instant connection to them that I don't have with 100% Japanese or 100% gaijin people.
Right.
You know, I have a buddy of mine in Bangkok. His name is Jay. He's half Canadian, half Japanese, just like me, you know. And so whenever I meet other people like that, I just like this instant connection. Did you get the sense from the community, like, hey, finally someone's making this film that we can all relate to?
I think so. I mean, the reason was that you know, we embarked on making this film was that, you know, we started doing research, and there was nothing. I mean, really, very little. And there are some, you know, and all my filmmaking and meeting other mixed filmmakers, I've seen a few short kind of self-exploratory like artistic pieces. But I thought, you know, this is a time we really want to raise these issues and experiences up to the greater public. So let's make a high quality kind of, you know, broadcast level documentary that can be, you know, aired on television anywhere. And so that's kind of what we set out to do. And one thing, you know, we started this Facebook page and, you know, we started getting all these likes. And another thing that also happened was a lot of other HAFU, you know, artists, musicians, designers kind of wrote to us and said, hey, I like what you're doing. Can I help somehow? Can we collaborate? And so we're working with a music composer who did the song to our teaser. He's in San Francisco. We have
the motion graphics.
Motion graphics is a guy named Ken Tanabe, who started an organization called Loving Day, which celebrates the day interracial marriage was legalized in the United States. So there's a lot of people, really talented people, who've come out and, you know, offered their support and talents to this film. And to me, that really says that people want to tell their story. And you know, we're so lucky that, you know, it just happened to be the right timing, and, you know, that we came up with this idea to make this film and receive such a response.
I think
from
because,
it.
Like I said, like, I think, like, I don't know about you guys, but I, for me, living in Canada, it was always rare to meet other HAFUs. You know, in places like Bangkok or when I lived in Hawaii, it's more common, but it's always quite rare. So I think there's a lot of us scattered around the world. But like you said, in our respective countries, we represent such a small minority that no one has ventured to make a film or bring awareness to it.
Right.
So the fact that you guys are doing this, I think, you know, a lot of people have been waiting for this type of film for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's really great that all these people are willing to contribute and help out. And these are the people that are donating stuff on your Indiegogo fundraising campaign?
Yes, there's musicians that are donating their CD albums, and then, you know,
there's artists that donated some drawings and sketches, and yeah, I mean, it's just been incredible, like the amount of emails from artists that wanted to collaborate with us, and now, you know, they have the chance to get their work shown out there, and people from all over the world can look at it and even claim it. So I mean, it's great. It's really, really great.
And let's talk about your Indiegogo campaign. You guys are finished filming,
yes,
right? And now you're in the editing stage, yes, which is always fun.
Right.
Or not.
Or not. But this is where your film gets made, though.
Yes,
this is
certainly
the part of this is the story part, more so than the filming sometimes. So you guys have an Indiegogo campaign where you're trying to raise $10,000,
right,
to finalize the filming of your campaign. And, mm-hmm, and what can people get if they donate and they help out?
Well, we got so we contacted a lot of people who could actually, you know, donate something from their artistic means or, you know, like educational means. And so we have some professors who have written books about the mixed race experience, or like having raising mixed children, you know, what was the book called Miyoka-san,
yeah,
for example. Also, we have like paintings from half Japanese artists who would have probably, you look at it and you can see that Japanese element in their, you know, pieces. Or we have jewelry. We have, what else do we have?
Yeah. Well,
if people donate, will they get a copy of the DVD?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're asking people if they can contribute at the $50 level.
Right.
They'll receive a DVD. And then there's other great perks like, you know, it's, I think, probably really great if we can get, you know, people to support us and give it maybe $100 for getting their names in the credits.
The credits, yeah, that's a great one. Because you think that it's nothing, but then when you actually see your name in the credits, you're like, oh my God, my name's in the credits, you know, and you really point at it, and it's funny.
And everyone in the theater is like rolling their eyes.
All right.
Like, everyone, that's me.
Yeah. Also, I forgot to mention our sister project, the HAFU Japanese Project, where our ideas came from. We have this booklet that they made some months ago because we did this exhibition at this art center in Akihabara, and so they made this kind of like booklet catalog that's like a preview of what the book, the upcoming book, because there's also this book with the photographs and the interviews that's going to come out hopefully next year that Natalie and Marcia are working on. So we have this preview booklet for how much was it?
We're asking, $20.
$20 that if there's people who want to read about what we're doing.
And there's a lot more facts and figures, more demographics in it. So I think it's really, it's beautifully laid out booklet. And, it's included for any contribution over 20. So I highly recommend people who are, really interested in the subject.
And the stats.
And to get their hands on it.
Yeah, the 1 in 30 babies factor and have a little bit of, explanation where they can get informed about where we're getting all our details.
And your guys' movie and the book's coming out around the same time next year?
The book, I think, is they're still taking, they need a little more time to work on it. So, but our plan is to definitely get the movie out next year.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I think the one thing, that I really like about this Indiegogo campaign is that really hope that, it really gives that sense of community, and this community is growing around this film, and that everybody who participates in the campaign is helping to make this movie. That's really what I hope our campaign communicates.
Yeah.
I think so too, because, like I said, like, Hafus, we're kind of scattered all around the world, and maybe we don't quite feel connected to the country that we're in, So I think a project like this allows everyone to kind of rally together and say, like, hey, we're not alone, We got some other brothers and sisters around the world. So that's really good stuff. So your project is about 50% funded on Indiegogo right now. So if you're listening to this and you got some yen, dollars, euros, pesos, whatever you got lying around, head over to their website at hafufilm.com, and you can see their Indiegogo campaign there. Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. Yeah.
That's it. That wraps up another episode of Tokyo Podcast. Thanks again to Lara and Megumi for coming on the show. I always enjoy meeting other Hafus because it's always fun to hear what kind of mix they are. Japanese culture is so rigid and so strong that it's fun to throw in a splash of Spanish or some crazy Australian into the mix just to see how the in-laws are going to react to it. So I am really looking forward to watching their film. If you're interested in helping out with a donation, visit hafufilm.com. They just recently completed their first round of funding on Indiegogo, and they were successful in hitting their goal. However, with documentary filmmaking, there's really never enough money. Now comes the editing process, the submitting to the festivals, all that stuff takes money. So even though they've hit their initial target, if you do feel like donating, I'm sure they will greatly accept it and appreciate it. Once again, thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Anthony Joe, and bye-bye.